Thanks a million, Ray.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. How are you? How you doing? Hope you are in good form. Let me know what you're up to. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We always love to hear from you to join in the chats. Now, yesterday we were talking about our childhood toys and in particular our teddy bears. And I didn't get time to get through to your texts, but in a couple of minutes I will. We ran out of time, but I've got a few of them here that just really resonated with us. And but staying with childhood toys, I see Barbie is in the news again today, and she has been in the news a lot recently, hasn't she? And I think Mattel, who are the makers of Barbie, they've been very clever at moving with the times and staying relevant. As of today, a new inclusive line of Barbie dolls are available to buy in shops. It's part of the Rose, Barbie and Friends campaign. So now there is a doll with vitiligo, there is a doll with a prosthetic limb, another in a wheelchair, and one with a hearing aid too. And you know, it is doing them well because it looks like Barbie is set to be the most sought after toy this Christmas, which is pretty incredible considering how long she's been around, isn't it? Number two looks like it's going to be Lego, again an old classic, followed by Nintendo Switches in third place. So that's the most popular toys for this Christmas. And Barbie's got a new movie coming out, and that looks like it's going to hit screens in July 2023. So again, that looks like it'll keep them on the top spot. And speaking of Lego, you've probably heard about the new Lego store on Grafton Street, which opened today. I can't wait to get in. Lots of little people and not so little people excited about that one too. So good luck to them. So yeah, you sent your teddy texts by the truckloads in yesterday. And this was after the lovely piece that Rosita Boland did in the Irish Times. Claire in Kerry text in, "My teddy is 6 weeks younger than I am and I will be 38 this year. I can almost count the number of nights I have slept without him. I now have two sons aged 2 and 5 and they know not to go near him. He's such a comfort to me and always has been." And that says that's from Claire, who says she realises she sounds deranged after sending that text in. Another listener, Catherine, "My father died in April, age 95. He had a teddy bear that he absolutely adored, and when he was 12, his mother, my grandmother, said, 'You're too big for that now,' and took it off him. He said he pined for that teddy for years and afterwards said he'd read an article recently where his mom shouldn't have taken his beloved teddy, and it's just a point to prove that even aged 95, dad still remembered his teddy, and no matter what age one is, they're so important." And that comes in from Clara in Clara. Catherine, check out Much Loved, which is a book of photographs by Mark Dixon. It's an amazing collection of people's childhood teddies, and even Mr. Bean's teddy got into this book. Such a beautiful read, and that's recommended by Lisa in Ashburn. Tony texted in, "I had my mother's teddy bear, which came everywhere with me for years. I still have him up in the attic. I must retrieve him. His name was Bluey and his brown fur was all worn away. He was stuffed with sawdust and had button eyes. He was probably 100 years old now." Somebody else, "Our daughter had a teddy simply known as Ted, lost and found several times. Although now said daughter is married, teddy is still with her." And you know, it is. It's those, when you think about the things and trends that come and go, it really is quite significant that we do have that one teddy or that one doll that's still there despite change. And actually, speaking of change, it's just reminded me, we were getting into the car this morning and there was a CD on the back seat, which Jack O'Rourke, he was in on Friday last week, he'd given me a CD after the show. So I left it on the back seat and my 4-year-old picked it up this morning. I was strapping her into the car seat and she said, "Mom, what's this?" She'd taken it out of the sleeve. So it was just the CD itself. I said, "Oh, that's a CD." And she said, "What's a CD?" I said, "Oh, well, it has lots of lovely music and songs on it." At which point, like, the head went back and she started laughing hysterically, going, "Mom, don't be so silly. Music comes from phones." And I thought, wow, that is a defining moment. That is a cultural full stop right there. And I was saying it to the lads here in the office and they were just, so many stories of children finding things absolutely hilarious that make us feel that we should all be wheeled into a museum. Like Niamh was trying to explain to her daughter about renting a movie in Extravision. So she was saying, like, we had to, you know, to get a movie, to watch a film, you had to get into the car, you had to go down the road, you had to go to this special shop and all the boxes were on the shelf. And you might not even get to see the video that you wanted because somebody else might have taken it out before you. And somebody else trying to explain that you had to sit in a hall. Everybody had their phones in a hall plugged into the wall if you wanted to make a phone call. So it was just like lots of, you know, queuing eye rolls and, oh, yeah, right, that the kids came back with, because, yeah, they're just, it's how much things have changed so quickly. So we're looking for the moments today when your kids made you feel ancient. As we said, they do it so well and with such conviction. So get them into us, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, after chatting to best-selling author Catherine Ryan Howard yesterday, I spotted this new study called How to Write a Bestseller, where basically a group of people got together and they studied the 20 best-selling fiction titles of 2021 in the UK to see what they had in common. And they chose 10 things that the majority of these best-selling novels had in common, including they were generally books of fiction, written by an author over 50, mainly set in England, narratives were in the third person, but most importantly, had been recommended by Marion Keyes, which I just think is brilliant. So out of the top 20 best-selling books in the UK, excluding her own book, Grown Ups, which was number 8 in the list, she had recommended 7 of the top 20 novels. So again, she just went into a category of her own there. So clearly, she not only knows how to write a bestseller, but also how to spot one. So well done her. All right, let's get some music. This is the wonderful Orla Gartland. You're not that special, babe. That is the wonderful Orla Gartland. We were talking about the things that our kids say that make us feel ancient. My 10-year-old son describes events that happened in the 90s as the late 1900s. He also couldn't believe that I'm older than Google. Mairead said her child came out with, did people wear top hats when you were a boy, Dad? Another one, when I was 35 and my son was 5, he asked me, did you write with feathers when you were small, Mom? Marguerite, my daughter is now 27, asked when she was 4, what are those giant black CD things that Nana has? And they were, of course, the LPs and the albums. Last year, I ran into Pennies in a hurry, says another listener, at closing time. And I asked a group of staff, where's the hair lacquer? They had no idea till an older woman said the hairspray is over there. And I really did feel old. All right, lots more coming in. Keep them coming in. 51551. But let me now tell you about today's quiz. Because we are reeling of the years, as we always do, and we will be doing that after 4 o'clock. We've gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, songs, news reports, TV shows, movies, and we are looking for 2 people to come on air and answer 3 questions after 4 o'clock. We can play you a short clip, which gets you 2 points, or a long clip, which gets you 1 point. So if you are brave enough to take part today, let me tell you about the prize to tempt you to pick up the phone. For our prize winners this week, we have a 2-night stay for 2 people, as well as a cocktail before dining on an evening of your choice at the Botanical Restaurant in the Hotel Dublin One. Designed for creative minds and social spirits, Dublin One, set in the North Circular Road, offers unique, stimulating stays for guests who are hungry for more. They've lovely cosy rooms, all day dining at the Botanical Restaurant. You can have lazy brunch. They have a lovely courtyard to hide away in. So all of that is at Dublin One, and you can check out the new hotel, dublinonehotel.com. So to be with a chance of winning that, all you got to do is answer this question. The Rose of Tralee returns to our screens next week. In what county is Tralee? An easy one for you today, guys. If you're not in, you can't win. So pick up the phone and call 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And we will get you on air after 4 o'clock. Okay, back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, there's no denying, if you were reading the papers today or watching the news, there's a lot of doom and gloom around and a lot of sadness and pretty shocking things happening. So if you want a lift and something to put a genuine smile on your face, you need to tune into the European Championships and see how our Irish athletes are representing us. They are breaking records, they are achieving dreams, and there was no bigger smile at the European Championships last night that could beat Rashida Adeleke's. Rashida broke the national record in the women's 400 metres final. She is only 19 years of age. It looks like this is just the beginning for her, and Rashida is here on the line to tell us about her amazing performance last night. Hey Rashida, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So has it all sunk in yet today? Did you manage to get a few hours sleep last night?
I got like no sleep last night. Literally, the adrenaline was still like rushing,
pumping through you. I mean,
literally,
like it was so incredible. Take us through last night's race. How were you feeling beforehand?
Beforehand, I was quite confident. You know, the only like negative aspect was really the lane draw. I kind of screwed myself in the heat by getting such a bad lane. But I was just confident. You know, I was just gonna go into it open-minded. You know, at the end of the day, it's all 400 meters. Although, like lane one is kind of tight, especially because I'm so tall and stuff.
Yeah, explain that. Explain that to us for like those of us who don't know athletics. Mm-hmm. Usually, like lane one, you're right in, like you're the first lane. Obviously, why is it difficult?
Yeah.
And how do you end up being put there? Like, is it a lottery thing or what happens?
So basically, lane one is the inside lane of the track. It's like the tightest curve, and so how they assign us our lanes is that so from the semi-finals you have to come top two, and there's three semi-finals, so that's six girls, and they pick the two fastest out of the three semi-finals can also go through to the finals. So I got one of the small queues, so I was not top two in my semi-final because
okay.
I kind of fell asleep on the home straight. So a girl nipped me on the line, and so I could have got either lane. So the automatic qualifiers, the top twos, they get the middle lane.
Okay.
If you are a small queue, you get one of the like outside or inner lane. So yeah, I was hoping maybe I get lane seven or lane two at least, but no, I got lane one, which is weird because it's usually like the slowest that goes into lane one or lane eight. But It was grand, you know. At the end of the day, there's nothing you can do about that. You just have to like prepare for it. So that's what I did. My coach and I, you know, he drew up a plan. Like, it's how you're gonna have to run the race. And
but even with that, Rashida, like even with that, like you broke the national record in lane one. Like, and you're kind of mostly like 200 meters, like 400 meters for you is pretty new, right?
Yeah, that was my sixth race ever. It was just unreal. Like, I'm still learning the event, so I don't really know like what I can do and what like feels like I'm going too fast, I'm going too slow. So it's all still a learning experience for me. So I definitely learned from that race yesterday. Like, I just need to, you know better how to run the race, and hopefully with more experiences I'll be able to, you know, perfect it.
And that's because I was going to say, it must be hard to judge it if you're so used to like bursting out of the tracks at the 200
exactly.
meters. When you were coming around, like you were in third, sort of fourth place, and then like you like to know when to go and to know when to hold back must be so challenging.
Yeah, it's so hard because like that's the thing I find frustrating about the 400. So like the 200, you just sprint the whole way. Like,
try your best
to sprint the whole way. But the 400 is all about like tactics. So you have to like get out the first like 100, then you have to hold, and then you have to kick again, and then you have to hold that. Like, it's just so much to think about during the race. And like at the same time, I didn't really know exactly what type of shape I was in, so I didn't know if I was going to have this complete strength I needed to bring me home. But you know, at the end of the day, like, I did what I could, and
you did
a couple more years.
Come on. Like, and I heard you say that when you spotted yourself on the big screen, that it kind of threw you off a little bit.
So yeah, coming on home straight, coming off the second curve, I was like, oh my god. I was looking at the screen coming home, and I was like, oh my god, I can win a medal. Like, I'm in medal contention. And I feel like I just kept looking at the screen the whole time when I was running home, running on the home straight. And I feel like that threw me off. Like, I should just focus on the race more. And that's another thing that I just learned from that race. It just wasn't the smartest thing to do.
But you know what, it's like, it's amazing to just hear you say you've learned. Like, all you do every time you do a race like that, you learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is it true that you have ran 49 races this year?
Yeah, 49 races. Like
sorry,
from indoors.
Is that not mental? Like, is that normal, or is that...
No, like, for the NCAA season, that's how it works. Like, just continuous races in and out every week, every 2 weeks, just racing.
Wow.
Because, like, yeah, we just have to get ready for, like, our nationals, and I have to come back to do international competitions post-season. So yeah, just trying to stay in shape and trying to stay motivated and committed. That's the main thing.
And come here, you're living in America for the last year. Where are you doing most of your training?
So at the University of Texas in Austin, that's where I go up to school and I get trained there. Yeah, it's amazing over there.
Do you love
it? Such a good vibe. Yeah, I love it there. Like, it's just a perfect balance of everything. School, athletics, and just life in general. Like, Austin is an amazing city. So
it
is
such a cool...
of everything.
Great food, great music.
Yeah,
do you get to have a bit of a social life as well?
Yeah, like, we have a really good balance, like, and with training, it's not too hectic, so, like, we do get a little bit of free time here and there, so, like, yeah, we have loads of time to, like, you know, explore and, like, hang out with your friends, just get up to whatever you want to read.
Oh, good. Rob Heffernan was saying he was really proud that you kept your Tala accent, considering he was saying a lot of the athletes that go to the States, they get an American accent within 5 seconds.
No, literally, because, like, an American accent itself, because, you know, we grew up watching Disney Channel and all that, so, like, we are really, like, so exposed to, like, the American accent, so it's so easy to catch on to, so, like, yeah, I was surprised, but I don't even have it myself.
But come here, a big week, as we all know, for the Irish runners with yourself and, of course, with Israel as well, Israel Olatunde, and he set new records. Is there friendly competition or is there just competition? Because you came fifth and
no.
He came sixth.
No. Like, it's like, we're like a duo at this point. So, like, we're a team.
I love it.
Like, we support each other. We've always supported him. He's always supported me. I've always supported him. I'm just so happy he's getting the recognition he deserves. Like, I'm just so, so happy for him.
Yeah, well, listen, it's great to see the support there. And you've got massive support here from us at home. You still got one more race to go. So when can we see you in action?
Yeah, we have the 4x4 tomorrow and the heats, and then hopefully we'll make the finals, which will be on Saturday. So yeah, still more to come. Hopefully we'll be able to make the final. That would be amazing.
So this is your relay. So it's yourself, Phil Healy, Sophie Becker, Charlene Maudsley, Kleena Manning and Roisin Harrison. That's your team there. Well, listen, are you feeling confident?
Yeah, like, this is a really good team. I definitely feel like we could, like, challenge for a medal. Like, if everyone, like, brings their A game, we should definitely be able to challenge for a medal, which would be so historic and it would be an amazing thing to achieve. So yeah, we're gonna all try our best. I'm definitely gonna try my best and hopefully we can bring a medal home.
Well, listen, your smile is infectious, your attitude is infectious. There's a beautiful photograph of you on the front of the Examiner today, and I'm just gonna, like, cut it out and stick it on my fridge because it just makes me happy looking at it. So well done. You're doing great things and good luck tomorrow. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Rashida Adeleke there. And there's lots of action still going on at the European Athletics Championships as well in Munich. So we should mention that there's twins Eilish and Roisin Flanagan. They are both competing for Ireland today. Eilish is competing in the 3,000 metre steeplechase semi-final and Roisin in the 5,000 metre final. And honestly, it's such a great watch, I have to say. And the panel are doing brilliant stuff as well. So I've really enjoyed them. All right, let's get a bit of James Vincent McMorrow. That is the wonderful James Vincent McMorrow. Your texts are still flying in here about the things that kids say to make us feel ancient. Michelle texted in, this was Michelle from yesterday's quiz actually. Catherine, my granddaughter Kyla, aged 4 now, was washing her hands in my house about a year ago and asked me, what was the big white thing? It was a bar of soap. My mind was blown. Mary said, one evening I was going out and putting on my makeup. My grandson was walking by my bedroom and he wanted to know, was I filling in the cracks in my face? Love that. Somebody else, my daughter was looking at photos of myself as a child and said, I feel so sorry for you, mummy. I asked what, and she said, you had no coloured clothes when you were a little girl. She was looking at black and white photographs. I love when my 6-year-old son says, Mam, remember when you were small and the sky was grey? I'm 40. I've tried to explain that photos might be black and white, but everything else still had colour. When my youngest daughter, Catherine, was in primary school, she came home one day and said, Dad, you're from Wexford. Do you remember the Vikings? That comes in from Gay. More coming in, but I'll try to get to a few more of them. But now I've got a gentleman in studio. Brendan Power is an aspiring author, grandfather and former pirate radio DJ. There's some CV. He has a new project to raise funds for the Make-A-Wish Foundation and he needs our help. Brendan is compiling stories of hope and inspiration for a book being released next year and he is inviting people to send in their own stories for consideration. He's in studio with me now, as I said. Brendan, lovely to see you.
And you as well, Catherine. Thanks.
So we're going to talk about the book. But first, do you mind? Like, I have to go back. Like, pirate radio DJ. You're no stranger to the studio then.
Well, I'm a stranger to this studio. It's a lot more modern than the one I had.
Now, so
we
you
almost
presented...
wound ours up by hand.
So this was the 1960s. So you presented on a pirate radio station.
Yes.
Station. Then tell us
yeah.
about it.
It was called Radio 270. It was off the coast of Yorkshire. Actually, the smallest of all the stations. It was on a converted trawler. So you can imagine what that might be like, anchored in the middle of the North Sea in the middle of winter.
Yeah, yeah, amazing.
A little
lumpy.
Because
people, when you hear pirate radio, you kind of forget that a lot of them were actually on ships.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were on there. Generally speaking, we were on there for a week and off for a week.
Okay.
But that was weather dependent.
Right.
Sometimes if the weather was too bad for the tender to get out to you, you'd be on for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it happened to be.
Wow.
Until
so
the weather...
you'd be on offshore and then you'd be onshore trying to drum up some support, obviously. And...
Yeah. On a week offshore, maybe you'd do a dance, you know, a dance hall or something like that. Or maybe you'd go out and work with the salespeople, help them. But the week on board... was just purely 6 hours a day doing programmes, 6 hours a day doing news, and the rest of the time trying to sleep.
Have the crack. And then how did you end up in the Caribbean?
Well, the pirates, as you may know, were closed down by the Marine Offences Bill. We were all out of work. There were very few stations in England where we could find work, so I just wrote to a load of stations all over the world. And I was fortunate. Radio Antilles in Montserrat replied and said, yes, we offer you a job. Come on out and join us. And off I went.
So how did you get to Montserrat in the 60s? Like, how long did that take?
It was really an interesting journey. You can make no internet or anything like that, so I had no idea where Montserrat was. I went to the library and looked up a travel book, and it said, you fly to Antigua, and when you get there, find a boatman who will take you across. And I thought, well, this doesn't sound... I don't know, what the heck, let's give it a try.
And off you went on your adventure.
Off I went, but there were actually planes flying out to Montserrat, which was...
Okay, and so did you do radio out there?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And is Montserrat, am I right, is that the island where... They call it the Irish Island of the Caribbean. I've never been.
It's the Emerald Isle of the Caribbean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. It's a British colony, and yet on Government House, up on the Gables, they have a big shamrock.
Okay.
So, yeah. And
it's like 70% of the descendants. This is like flashing back in a documentary that I watched. Like, there was 70% of the white population had Irish ethnicity.
Yeah, a lot of them. And place names there. You've got St. Patrick's, you've got Sweeney's, you've got Cork Hill, Kinsale.
Wow.
In fact, our studio was in a place called O'Gara's.
Okay.
So, yeah, very Irish indeed.
Okay. And where are you from yourself?
I'm from Feather-on-Sea.
Feather-on-Sea.
Can you tell by the accent?
Well, slightly. I can get a slight twinge. So you obviously lived in the UK for a little bit as well.
Yes, yeah, we went over there when I was 7 years old.
Okay. So did you move back to Ireland then when you left Montserrat?
No, I came back to, well, I went back to the UK at the start of commercial radio there.
Okay.
And worked in BR&B, which is in Birmingham. I worked there as commercial producer for a few years.
Okay.
And then had a complete change of career.
Right.
And I went into financial services, and I was also a speaker, a professional speaker on conference speaker and so on.
Okay.
Which is great fun because that took me all over the world.
Amazing. Well, that's you, that's Brendan.
That's me.
So you're compiling a book of stories, and we're going to tell people in a moment how they can contribute. But you have an entry in it, and it's called A Remarkable Young Woman. This is about your granddaughter, Niamh, who sadly passed away from cancer when she was 9.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about her.
Oh, how long have you got?
as long as you need.
No, Niamh was a remarkable lady, remarkable young lady. She was 9 years old when we lost her. Christmas the year before, we'd had a great Christmas. And then suddenly on Stephen's Day, we live next door to my son and his family.
Okay.
On Stephen's Day, my grandson came running around and said, quick, Grandad, Niamh's having a fit. I didn't know what he meant. We went round. She was in her dad's arms. She was shaking, and we couldn't get through to her, at all. Phoned for an ambulance. The ambulance took her out, kept her outside the house in the ambulance for about an hour while they stabilised her, then rushed her to hospital. We all followed, obviously. She was checked over there and then sent to the children's hospital a few miles away. Mm. 48 hours later, she had a brain operation. She had a brain tumour.
God love her.
she recovered from that. In fact, I went in to see her 48 hours later, and tubes attached to her and all sorts of things, and her hair half shaved off and a big smile on her face. And she said, "Guess what, Grandad? I've had an operation." I didn't know whether to laugh or not, but and that's how she was all the time. Mm. Smiling, laughing, telling us all about it. Mm. We thought that was it, that was fine, everything would be okay now. But sadly it wasn't. She had to have another operation as the tumour returned. That seemed to be okay. We thought, right, now things are going back to normal. She even went back to school. She hadn't been to school for it, and she loved school. So she went back to school again. And then suddenly, out of the blue, it came back again. She had to have a third operation. This time she had a stroke while she was having the operation, which damaged her speech, and she had to learn to walk again. She didn't have to learn to smile again. She kept doing that.
She kept doing that, the little mite. And in your story and how you write about her and what really, and this is the story that's going, that features in your book, for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, you speak a lot about how much she loved reading, you used to read to her, and also how much joy she got when Make-A-Wish took her to Lapland. They were little pieces for me that just...
Yeah, she did love reading, and she loved books all about him. In fact, we'd read a story, and then we'd pick the story for tomorrow. And I'd say, "There's a title. What do you think it means?" And she'd start talking about it. She'd do her own story, in fact, which was great. But yeah, Make-A-Wish came along. And they flew her and some other young children as well out to Lapland. And her mother went with her. And they were there for 3 or 4 days. Mm. Met Father Christmas and all sorts. Came back and she said, "Grandad, I've met Father Christmas." And I said, "Oh, that's wonderful." She said, "The real one."
Oh, absolutely.
And it was a real one, of course.
Yeah.
And we know it was because about a week later it was Christmas, and under the tree were all the presents she's asked for. So it must have been the real one.
Absolutely. Couldn't have been anybody else. Couldn't have been anybody else. Yeah. Oh, that's so special. And to have memories, I mean, it was, when was that? When did she pass, Brendan? Was that
2012. Yeah.
And like, I can imagine it doesn't get any easier. You learn to live with it. And is this your way then? This book is a way that you feel you can do something to give back and
yes.
In her memory, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Make-A-Wish is a fantastic organisation anyway.
They are phenomenal.
Incidentally, their 30th anniversary this year, and like everybody else, because of the cost of living and what have you, they're struggling for funds a little bit. And if I can do something to help some other young child, then that's brilliant. So, yeah, I thought we'd put this book together. And fortunately, I've had some great entries, some great contributions from people. In fact, from a couple of your colleagues,
mm-hmm.
Joe Duffy mm-hmm. has done one, and Mihalo Scannell, they've done them, and various other people. We've had Brian Kennedy, Tommy Fleming, Jason Smith, the Paralympian.
Brilliant.
So some wonderful people.
So the stories that people are contributing, they don't have to be, I mean, yours is obviously a very personal story about Niamh and dedicated to her and about her. But like what stories, like what's the mix of stories or what?
Right, it's guidelines are fairly simple, really. First of all, the length, anywhere between 500 and 2,000 words. So it can be fairly short. It can be reasonably long. And all we're saying is it should be true. So it can be about you, it can be about your family, it can be a story from history that you're retelling. So long as it's true and it has some sort of inspiration built into it.
Mm.
And that's it.
Like a message of hope.
A message of inspiration, yeah. And, you know, if people would like to send a story in, I'd love to see them. Sadly, we can't guarantee everyone will go in the book, but love to see them. And the important thing is the story, not the writing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not looking for literary geniuses or anything like that. If you've got a good story, send it in. If it needs editing, if it needs tightening up, we'll do all that.
Okay, so we'll help out. So you could have a great idea, but not maybe have the confidence to write.
Yeah, not everybody is a writer, you know, but they may have a story there. So jot it down anyway.
And it's your way, if you feel, so like all the proceeds will go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah, every penny.
So your contribution, whatever that is, will go towards helping the organisation. It's lovely.
Yeah, whatever the book makes will go to Make-A-Wish.
Mm.
And hopefully that will pay for somebody else to go to Lapland or to train with the Irish football team or to do whatever it
achieve
is they want to do.
Achieve a dream and live a dream.
That's it, and that's what they do. They are a... I mean, I see their things on Facebook, and when you see what they've done for kids and you see the smiles on the kids' faces, and these are kids with, you know, very life-limiting and life-threatening conditions, and it helps them. It helps their parents as well. Of course, the parents really are the unsung heroes.
Absolutely.
You know, if we had half their courage, we'd be marvellous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are your how are Niamh's parents doing? And I know her brother Sebastian features quite prominently in your story about her as well.
Well, I suppose they're like the rest of us. They'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian was just unbelievable. He was only 2 years older than Niamh, but mature way beyond his years. He looked after her. He played with her. He did everything for her. And now he's got a new sister. She's 6 years old now, Rosie. And he's 21 now. And he's exactly the same with her. He has all the time in the world for her.
Mm.
I keep telling him as a career he should be going into caring or child benefits. So, I don't know, something like that. But he won't. He likes construction.
Okay. Well, listen, it's a lovely idea. I have to commend you on it. I think it's fabulous. And Brendan can be contacted with entries or advice on writing your story. As you said, you're there to help people out. And you can email brendan@brendanpower.com. We'll put it up on our site as well.
Brilliant.
And get some entries in as well.
If they remember my name, they'll remember the email address.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
All right. Nice chatting to you this afternoon.
Catherine, thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That is the wonderful Wild Youth. One of Ireland's best loved acts joins me now in studio as he gears up for a very busy weekend. Monday?
How are you?
It has been too long.
I know.
It has been way too long. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. Having a pretty busy summer and delighted to be out there. Taking, you know, up the tarmac and seeing all the lovely towns around the country and not stressing out about, you know, the things that I was worried about, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, like it's been a pretty turbulent time. So, so has 2022 been treating you pretty good so far?
Yeah, like I've done a lot of gigs and I've been creative and doing all the things that I wanted to do. And I suppose... Yeah. I don't know, the last couple of years I had time to think about what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong. And I'm raring to go again.
And what did you come up with?
Well, you know, I suppose, I got a lot of stuff finished that I kind of wouldn't have got done because there was more time on my hands. And just even to think about how I kind of do my gigs, because I suppose sometimes I take a lot on without thinking about the quality of the gig or whether it's the right one to do because, you know, as you probably well know, you know, with parenthood, you kind of go, right, I just have to get this done and I have to make sure that I'm making ends meet and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, like when I met you first 100 million years ago and we were out in the town
not
and
that
we were having,
long, yeah.
having the crack, but we're parents now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So how has that changed? I mean, forget COVID because, I mean, COVID has been a really difficult time for musicians, I know. But, you know, in terms of becoming a dad and having to do the school run and the bits and the bobs, like how has that changed you as an artist and your performance? Because you have to make everything work in the 24 hours of the day that you have.
Well, creatively, it got harder, right? So I said to someone one time, you have to make twice as much money with half the effort because you don't really get the chance to focus on what you really are good at, you know? And then all of a sudden you find that you're good at cooking meals in 10 minutes and you're good at getting to school in 3.5 minutes when it's a 5-minute drive or whatever. Like there's all these, you know, but c'est la vie, you know, that's the way it is. But I also, the great thing that happened was I've got two kids and my youngest one is called Belle and she's now 11. But we ended up creating a lovely relationship because she's a lovely singer. And so I was doing like a bunch of online gigs during the whole, you know, COVID thing. Every Sunday night I'd turn up at, you know, 8 or 9 in the evening and I'd get her on for 20 minutes. And so we can go busking now if we feel like it or whatever. You know, we have a little repertoire and it's a wonderful thing.
And obviously you're just like, you know, she's a great singer. You're like keeping the door open for her. Like you wouldn't go, don't go into this industry. Go and get a proper job.
Well, she's a funny one because she wants, she doesn't like being around people, but yet she likes the, you know, the... people kind of applauding her, you know. I'm like, oh, well, you have to get with the program then, you know. You have to be a bit, you know, because I think team effort, if you want to be a musician, you have to be in it on a team, or you have to at least know how to be on a team, you know.
So, sure.
But yeah, so there's all these ups and downs, pluses and minuses. And the other great thing was for me is I play solo. I play as a duo. I'm here with my friend Keith Farrell. He's been with me for 20 years. And I play as a trio. And basically, so musicians are so busy now. So I found it very hard to find another guitar player. So I'm digging a lot deeper than I ever did, as in I'm playing more guitar than I would have usually. So I'm pushing myself a little bit more as a musician.
And it's great to hear that, I suppose. Like, because we have come through what we've come through, and then there's just this burst of music, you know, when you listen to Live Youth there and you go, oh, I love that track. That's a great track. There's like a lot of great music coming out. Is there a pressure? Do you feel a pressure to release songs? Or how do you kind of work that? Because obviously it's got to be the right time.
Yeah. Well, I have. Okay, so I wrote a song and I have it recorded now. It's called Underneath Vesuvius, right? And it's a song I wrote about going to Sorrento a long time ago with my wife. We weren't married at the time. And actually, it's her birthday today. So I'm going to say happy birthday, Sarah.
Happy birthday, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for putting up with me and all that goes with me. But so I have it. I have made a video. I went to Sorrento, made a video with a friend of mine, Adam, from Soda Blonde. And now I'm kind of going, how do I let the world know that this is happening? So there's another level of education that goes with, it's not even the music that you need to know, it's the rollout.
Yes.
How do I go on Instagram and go, I've got big news coming on Friday week.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then you put out one verse of it, and then, you know, Friday fortnight, you know, it's like, you know, and I don't have that energy, you know, I don't have that time, and that's another skill.
And it's a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job to do that.
So I don't know, I need help with that. Anybody want to help me, just...
Well,
you've
got such an army of fans who've stuck with you, who love you, who support you, who follow you.
Yeah.
And just even when you were saying there about Sarah, like, you know, thanks for sticking with me, because, you know, your fans, you're very open with them, and you're very, you know, they want to hear the old stuff. They want to hear all the old numbers. How does that sit with you now?
Well, you know, life is funny. I'm in the sandwich of life. My parents are at one slice of bread, and my kids are the other slice of bread, and then the two of them are forcing the filling out. You know, I'm in the middle. And, that's my cuisine version of as a metaphor. But anyway, I think now, like, I'm trying to figure out kind of what was your question again? Tell me that.
Well, I'm basically asking. Oh yeah. What I'm saying was,
Well, everything comes around. So all my fans now. So 10 years ago, a lot of my fans would have been parents for the first time, and it was harder to get them out. And now that their kids are 10 or 12 years of age, I feel that they're coming out again because the kids, you know, babysitting's not a cost and taxis and all that kind of stuff. So I feel that things are starting to pick up for me again, because I did notice a bit of a lull. A lot of my age group don't go into the city anymore because they might be commuting and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I played out in Dalkey one time on the 1st of February, about 7 years ago, and the gig sold out in 3 days. And I thought there'd be nobody at it because it was the 1st of February.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically there's all these people living out that way, or somewhere like Skerries, or somewhere like, you know, people are living there. They're not living in the city centre. They're not going into, you know, the gigs like
you
know, as much as they used to. So it's all an age thing, you know.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you are going to be performing at Park Live Festival, which is Wexford's largest outdoor live music series. And that's the 19th to 21st of August.
Yep.
Who else? There's a good lineup down there.
So that's tomorrow. And it actually starts early. I'm on at about 5 to 7. That's Friday. And it's in a place called Min Ryan Park in Wexford.
Okay.
And it's me. And then Something Happens.
Yes.
And then The Stunning.
Stunning. That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm getting up for a tune with The Stunning at the end. And then on Saturday, I'm in Waterford. It's an open air thing called the Churchyard Sessions. And tonight I'm in Ballintubbert House, but that's sold out, so you can't come. Sorry about that. Unless you're coming already.
Happy days. Okay, well, I'm conscious because you're going to play a track for us now. Tell us about it quickly.
This song is called Dark Long Enough. I wrote it as a poem, kind of come end of August, early September, wondering if I had done all the beautiful things that I should have done during the summer, and fearing that I hadn't. And it's just about, you know, get out and embrace life. Tick off your bucket list and whatever. And it's all about my youth in Burr, little boat races on the river and stuff. And I mentioned one of the lines I say, I'm talking about Huckleberry Finn. My life was a bit like that when I was a kid. So I have one of the lines is H-U-C-K, hook, huckleberry, hook. So it's hook me pink, just in case anyone gets mixed up on national
it's
radio.
Clean. We're clean on Radio 1.
Yeah, exactly.
One.
I just right, want to make that. I don't want to be closed down. I want my career to carry on.
All right, looking forward to it in your own time.
Okay, one, two, three, one, two, three. Come young-hearted people, and list how I'm feeling. I'm sick from the news, and I'm sick from the killing. There's a stretch in the evening, and it's magical stuff. Oh, come into the light, it will be dark long enough. Bourbon biscuit bogs, yeah, barking barn brack. Winter turf tokens, they're hard on the back. Mountain fleece blowing on heather like fluff. Oh, make friends with the light, it will be dark long enough. Oh, dark long enough, it's a sentence too long. Dark long enough, it's a lonesome old song. Dark long enough, it's the only excuse. Dark long enough is the only truce.
That oh my god, Keith Mundy, that is incredible.
Thank you.
That is a belter. Well done you. We're going to hear from Mundy a little bit later on in the show, but now I think I have to take a quick break.
The Rave Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Rave Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Toshen am the Priv Gilt and Anouk the Lakoch the Wallish. Gurmagat Koch, lots of texts still coming in about the things our kids say that make us feel ancient. Sinead said, my 9-year-old daughter Bronwyn asked her dad a few questions about when he was old. A few weeks later, we found a homework essay titled Olden Days with the following facts. For some reason, there were only two types of cheese, Calvita and Easy Singles. Telephones were stuck to walls. TVs were made of wood with only two buttons, and the internet did not exist. And signed off, interview with dad, aged 50. Oh, I love that. That is gold. Eugene from Clonmel. Many years ago, my son and daughter were 6 and 8. I took a stereo out of the attic to play some vinyls. When I put on, my son jumped with excitement and shouted down the hallway to his sister to come and see the biggest CDs ever in the world. Simon is now a massive fan of vinyls. And Aaron is texting, I went into a pharmacy one evening and asked for glass sweets. They weren't sure what I meant. Glass sweets. I'm not sure what you meant. Are they the glacier Fox's mints? So I'm getting nods from outside the window. There you go. All right, we'll try and get to a few more of them. But now it is time for this. Yes, we are reeling in the years. We have gathered up sounds, clips and lots of different things, TV shows, movies from over the years and decades. We have two people, Gabrielle and Paul, who are ready to do battle and try and win the prize. What are they playing for? They are playing for two nights for two people, as well as a cocktail before dining on an evening of your choice at the Botanical Restaurant in the Hotel Dublin One, designed for creative minds and social spirits. Dublin One, set on the North Circular Road, offers unique, stimulating days for guests who are hungry for more. They've got lovely cosy rooms, all day dining at their Botanical Restaurant, lazy brunches every weekend, and a courtyard to soak up some culture in the heart of Dublin's most creative neighbourhoods. And that all awaits you at Dublin One. So you can find out more about it, just log on to dublinonehotel.com. So the question that we asked was, the Rose of Tralee returns to our screens this next week. In what county is Tralee? And the answer, of course, is Kerry. And the two people that got that right, I'm sure they weren't the only two people who got it right, but the two people to get through was Gabrielle Lagru, I think is how I pronounce that, and Paul Giovanni. And that is a name I recognise. Good afternoon, lads. How are ye?
Hi, Catherine.
Well, Gabrielle, I will start with you first because you are player number one. Tell me, where are you calling from today?
Well, actually, I'm pulling in. I'm heading down to the Rose of Tralee.
Ah, you're joking.
I'm this side of Adair, actually, Catherine. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, myself and my husband are heading down.
Okay, and what has you going to the festival?
Believe it or not, no. Our son, Alan, is one of the escorts.
He's one of the escorts. Amazing, amazing. Yeah. So tell him, when did he apply and what made him want to do it?
I just probably the big inspiration, the whole lot. Like, you know, I, as he was growing up, I was just looking at me, watching the Rose of Jolie. And just, he just said, Mum, God, that'd be a nice thing to do. So I said, okay, you do it.
Brilliant. And who is he escorting?
He doesn't know yet. He won't know it now till this evening.
Has he got a favourite?
Not really, no. He's easy going, Alan is. So, yeah, he's...
Brilliant.
Back, you know yourself, yeah.
Brilliant. All yeah. right, well, Gabrielle, stay on the line there. Paul Devaney, how are you, sir?
How are you? Are you well?
Now, Paul, when I saw the name come in there during the ad break, I was like, is that Paul Devaney from Operation Transformation? And I said, there is only one Paul Devaney. You're a first
time. I'm unique, all right.
You are. You certainly are unique. You're a first time quizzer on the Ray Darcy Show.
First time quizzer, yep.
How have you been? What's going on?
Oh, all right, same old thing done now, tearing around the countryside and...
Driving around, what do you do, remind us?
I am a community liaison after.
Yes.
With Wardenburg Construction.
Very good, very good. So you're driving around and life is good. How's the kids? How's Michaela and Katie?
They're good, yeah, sure. They're back to school now in another week. Next week, I think they're nearly going back to school.
I know. And how have you managed the summer? Did you get away or did you stay at home?
We did, yeah. We were in Doolin there for a bit, down in Nagel's campsite there in Doolin. So we love going down there with caravan every year. So we're down there for a little bit. We're in Bulgaria as well. It was a holiday we had from 3 years ago.
Okay, so you finally got abroad.
We finally got to go.
And I know you're big into the country music. You love a bit of country music. Did you get to hear Mundy there earlier?
Yeah, I did hear him. Yeah, we had our festival this year, thanks be to God, after 3 years. So it was great. It was bigger and better than ever before, you know.
Brilliant. I have to say, that Mundy, the track that he just played there, I love it. I think it's going to be a belter.
Yeah, it's catchy, yeah.
Catchy. All right. Gabrielle, you are player number one. Paul, you are player number two. Do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Best of luck, Paul.
Good luck, Gabrielle. Good luck.
All right. As I said, Gabrielle, you're player number one, so we're going to start with you. The year is 2004. All right. So that's for the two of you. That's what we're playing, the year that we're playing in. So we're going to start with a movie question, Gabrielle. Do you want to go long or short?
I go short.
You're going to go short. Okay. For 2 points, Gabrielle, this newsroom comedy was a huge hit in 2004. Can you name it?
Ron, are you okay?
The man put it back, sir.
Calm down. Breathe, Ron. Breathe.
The man, that's from the motorcycle.
Probably my favorite movie of all times. Can you name it, Gabrielle?
Oh, God. Home Alone, no,
unfortunately. It was Anchorman, starring the incredible Will Ferrell, and released in 2004. Steve Carell is in it as well, Paul Rudd, Christina Applegate. It's just a cracker. Get it and watch it if you can at some point, Gabrielle. It's brilliant. Okay, so no points for you, Gabrielle. Paul, coming to you in the movies. The year is 2004. What are you feeling, long or short?
Oh, I'm going to go long because I am useless at the movies.
All right, let's see how you get on. This sports comedy shows a face-off between two rival gyms. Can you guess the name of the movie?
Allow me the pleasure of introducing you to Blade. Laser. Blazer. I believe you've met my fitness consigliere, Michel.
We met.
Oh, and I almost forgot. Our last player. Meet Fran Stalinaskovich-Davidovitsky.
What do you think, Paul? Do you recognise it?
Not a clue. Bubble, I know Bubble DeVito. I'm shouting. You what? I haven't a clue.
All right. Hard luck. That was Dodgeball is what we were looking for, with Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller. It grossed over $114 million in the box office. So that's one for you to watch tonight, Paul. Okay, Gabrielle, back to you.
Okay.
This is your music question. The year again is 2004. What do you reckon? Long or short?
I go long.
You go long. Try and get 1 point. Okay, this hit was released by a legendary girl group. Can you name the song or the group who sang it?
It's up top from the BK. Know how to put that money three ways. Always riding big on the freeway. that us country girls we like. Low cut Caesars with the deep waves. So quick to snatch up your Beyonce.
All right, Gabrielle, have you got it?
Oh, God. Pussycat Dolls? I haven't a clue. No.
No, unfortunately not. It was Destiny's Child. That is what we were looking for there. Okay, hang tough, as they say. Paul, back to you. This.
My God, you're picking the hard ones today, aren't you?
Well, I thought that was pretty easy, but that was just me. All right, let's see how you do.
I go along.
You're gonna. I don't even have to ask.
I go along.
Okay.
Try country one.
All right, this song, Paul, became an anthem in 2004. Can you name the song or the rock band who sang it? All right, they played here recently. Have you got it, Paul?
Blink?
No, no. Good guess. Blink 182. No, it was Green Day is what we were looking for there. Don't worry, lads. You're doing equally as bad as each other, so that's good. Gabrielle, we have your last question. This is in the news. So do you want to go long or short?
I go long.
Go long. Okay, you've lost your nerve, Gabrielle. Right, let's see, can we get one point on the board? 2004 was the year that a transport service returned for Irish commuters. Can you name what it was?
The new service was officially launched by the Minister for Transport, Seamus Brennan. He said that after the years of controversy surrounding light rail in Dublin, it was time to celebrate.
Genuinely, it's a day for celebration. A day to say to ourselves as Irish people,
Gabrielle,
that we can actually.
We are
going to
take a moment. Everybody is clapping outside the window. We're like, woo! That is 1 point on the board for you. It was the Lewis. It launched on the 30th of June 2004. So there you go. That was the first time in 55 years. Okay, 1 point for you. Now, Paul, that means you could either choose to go long and go for a tiebreaker or go short and try and win the game.
We'll go short.
Okay, go short. Let's do it. This is for the win, Paul, if you get it right. The year is 2004, and that year saw the launch of one of Ireland's largest music and arts festival. Can you name what it was?
The Boutique Festival is expected to attract 15,000 punters with its eclectic mix of chilled out sounds, comedy acts, and the chance to get in touch with your inner yogi at the Body Soul Zone.
All right, what's the festival, Paul?
Oh, Jesus. Body and Soul?
No! Paul! It was Electric Picnic 2004. That was the year that
it
Electric
Picnic... It was the 15,000 people to put me off. Well done, Gabriella.
So... quite shockingly and surprisingly, Gabrielle, you have won the game today. Well done, you. Paul Devaney, we are going to be sending you down 2 Ray Darcy Show mugs. Yourself and Bubbles now can sit over over a cup of tea and go and watch Dodgeball tonight. How about that?
That'll do. Thanks, Catherine.
All right, nice to chat to you again, Paul.
Cheers.
Look after yourself.
Bye-bye.
So, Gabrielle.
Oh, God, I feel like a dumb CD here now.
Listen, sometimes, you know, and it depends the year and, you know, where you're at. So, listen, well done.
Thank you so much. You have
got a night away in the Dublin One Hotel. So you've got 2 nights away, actually, for 2 people. So, listen, take it all in. You've got bigger fish to fry today to go down and support your son at the Rose Trilies. Listen, I hope you have a wonderful weekend, all right?
Thanks a million, Catherine.
Take care. Well done.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That is the wonderful Denise Chyla. Mundy is back in studio with us. We are getting a lot of love for you today. Somebody wants to know as well, do the girls ever get excited about who their daddy is? Do their school friends know?
Well, I believe it's more of a hassle than anything else because just, you know, the way, because you've been on telly a couple of times, it means that you should be driving a Lamborghini, you know? And I have a Ford Kuga. And it doesn't make sense to some of the kids, you know? So I'm just trying to play it down in my little Kuga.
I love it. I love it. Again, I was just playing Denise Chyla again, somebody else who's making waves. Do you keep like on top of what's happening in the music scene here?
Mostly in the car. That's the only way I can really do it. I have to say, in the last few years, since things have, the kids have gotten a little bit older, I feel like that I have more time to do that. And the great thing now is I take them out for a little mountain drive in the evening.
Okay.
And I let them be the DJs. So I'm listening to finding out all sorts of new stuff. So it's great.
Brilliant. At the top of the show, I don't know if you heard, I was chatting about the fact that my little one, my 4-year-old, she found a CD in the back seat of the car today. She was like, what is this? You know. But you have a huge CD collection, right?
I do, yeah. Yeah. Listen, I nearly bought a pony when I was about 14, and the pony was going for about 350 quid, and at the same time a Ghetto Blaster was going for 350 quid, and you didn't need a saddle with the Ghetto Blaster, so my dad convinced me, and you don't need a field with a Ghetto Blaster. So anyway, I bought a Ghetto Blaster and I started collecting CDs when I was about 14, and up until very recently.
Do you still
recently.
Listen to them?
I do. Well, do you know what? I find that my brain, I can look at all the CDs and I go, there's the Doors. There's Arctic Monkeys, but when I go on Spotify, there's so much I can't think.
I get
and it. It doesn't stand sit in front of you. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I like to be able. It's like a library. I like to be able to walk in and go, there's that.
There
book.
It is. All right. What are you going to play for us now?
I'm going to do my rendition of a Burt Bacharach song, and it's called "Walk On By."
Love it.
And it's a song I just really like, and I've been learning this for the last 20 years.
Take it away.
And I'm going to learn it on RT Radio 1 today. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by, walk on by. Just let me be. If you don't see the tears, then let me grieve in private. 'Cause each time I see you, I break down and cry. Walk on by, walk on.
Monday, absolutely fabulous. Great to see you, hon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great to
Thank
see you.
Thank you. All right, you may recognise my next guest as the woman behind Deliciously Ella. Since Ella Mills started deliciouslyella.com, she has since released a recipe app, 6 cookbooks, including the best-selling debut cookbook ever in the UK, and has an audience of over 3 million people on social media. She joins us now on the line from London to tell us about her brand new book, How to Go Plant-Based. Ella, hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Oh, lovely to chat to you. And I mean, not only obviously have you got an incredibly busy work life, you're also a mom of 2 girls.
I am.
Yes. Well, as a mom of 2 girls myself, I was kind of interested because your new book, How to Go Plant-Based, it's also family focused as well, right?
It is. It is indeed. And I've been thinking about this book for the last few years. My oldest daughter's just turned 3. And also, the world has changed so much. When I first started Deliciously Ella back 10 years ago, it was, you know, the numbers are pretty much the same across UK and Ireland. It was less than 5% of our total population ever bought plant-based food products or thought about this. And now we're just nearing 50%. And I just really noticed that there was such a change of people dipping their toe into flexitarianism, meat-free Mondays, you know, with the health and the environmental factors, just wanting to cut down a little bit on more processed food or just include more plant-based meals, but not knowing how to do that. And I think that was both on a personal level, but also lots of people with families and lots of people with teenage children who were really inspired by the environmental side of it to try and cut back on their meat intake. And I just felt you could wrap up all those questions. Where do you get plant-based protein? What about calcium? Can my family do this? What about the gut health benefits? What about the total health benefits? Plus all the actually doable on a Monday and your busy recipes.
Mm. And that's what I have to say, because I had a good look at the book last night, and what I liked about it is that you've got it, it's kind of all between, it's all there. Like, you've got the sciencey bit at the front, you've got all the questions that you want answered. I mean, people still, a lot of people would ask what's the difference between, say, plant-based and veganism and vegetarianism. You cover all of that, you work with a panel of experts. And again, what I thought was interesting in terms of your own personal life is that your two girls, how they are both different eaters, and like, you weaned them both the same, but they're very different. And I just thought it was lovely when you went into it that there's like, you kind of show that there's not one way to feed your kids, like there's not one way to parent.
Oh, absolutely. There's not one way to feed your children or ourselves. And I am really passionate about that. Obviously, we're a plant-based brand. The book's called How to Go Plant-Based, but it's very much designed for everybody, whether you are, as I said, kind of dabbling in flexitarianism and just trying to introduce more plant-based foods. And it's the same with your children. I mean, we are all so different. We've got different needs, different demands, different pressures in our life. And I think we come from this quite kind of dogmatic diet culture to some extent, where you're like on a bandwagon or you're off a bandwagon. And I think when we look at the importance of eating more plants, especially in the context of just one in five children managing to get their five a day, or one in four adults, you know, are fairly getting 50% of the fiber that we need every single day. You know, we, and some environmental factors as well, you know, in the UK, I know vegans have half the carbon footprint. So if we're going to just eat more plants, we've got to make it feel accessible to everybody and not binary. And I think, you know, I really learned that from my children, which is that there isn't one way to feed them. It's different every day, every week, every month, every child's so different. But we as adults are the same. And I think sometimes with the way that we eat, we kind of force things in a way that makes us feel like we're compromising or we're deprived, and it just doesn't last. And I'm really anti that approach. To me, more is more. How can we make it easier to eat more veggies, more home-cooked meals, more healthy meals more of the time versus an all-or-nothing approach?
Okay. And how do you feel, Ella, about like meat substitute products?
You know, everything's got a time and a place in life. You know, as I said, no one size fits all, but I think for me, with a plant-based diet, the emphasis is really on eating more plants, because, as I said, you know, we're certainly not eating enough, and that's having a really detrimental impact on our health. I mean, in a kind of extreme end, the World Health Organization has said 71% of premature deaths are linked to diseases related to our lifestyle. And I think COVID's really highlighted our collective need to improve our health. And as I said, only 25% of us even manage our five a day. And there's no way to change that without making it just so much easier, so much simpler, so much more accessible for people.
And I'm just even looking at some of the recipes here, and they're quite straightforward, a lot of them, and they're quite accessible for people as well. And I feel that sometimes when you look in your cupboard and you've got your beans or your lentils or your butter beans or whatever it is, that sometimes it feels a little bit overwhelming to come up with something. But actually, I think what you've broken it down really well. And I think if you have a couple of staples, even if it's what you called, I think your explanation in the book was being plant forward. So if you're not entirely plant based, you can introduce more plant-based meals into your days and reduce your meat as well, which I thought was it's a lovely, you know, it's lovely the way you've laid it out.
Oh, thank you. No, I always say that to people. You know, my number one piece of advice, you know, if you are trying to make some changes for your health and for the environment, don't do it all at once. You know, just simply swap it. So instead of the veg being the side, make them the main. You know, instead of making a prawn curry, make a veggie curry. You know, we've got delicious, zingy, 30-minute veggie curry. It's super easy. And then you could have the grilled prawns on the side. So suddenly 90% of the meal is plant-based, but it still feels familiar. And I think that kind of approach is really helpful. But as you said, the aim was to make it, the recipe, so straightforward. So there's loads of one pan, one tray recipes, like the one pan veggies.
Okay.
Also.
All right. Listen, it has been such a pleasure talking to you, Ella Mills. The new cookbook is called How to Go Plant-Based. You can go check it out now. That is all we've got time for. John Cook is coming up next on Drive Time. Have a lovely afternoon, and I'll be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.